This is the Big Biz Show. What's so funny about investing money, you ask?
Play ball.
The Big Biz Show with Russ and Sully hope to answer that. Top-rated insightful financial analysis. If you're looking for insightful financial perspective on key market strategies, keep looking. I told you, this is the Big Biz Show. Hello. This is Russ and Sully.
Hey, live from the Jump Television Studios in sunny San Diego, California. Big Biz Show's on the air. You know, we're nationwide, coast to coast. 110 million broadcast television homes, 150 radio stations. Plus, we're on Armed Forces Radio Network in 175 countries. So, yeah, we're TV and radio at the same time. I just noticed that your coat, I think maybe I noticed this before, but your coat matches our logo perfectly.
Well, it's a plan. You know, I got together with the committee when you were out of town.
The logo committee?
Yeah, when we redesigned.
Are you the ombudsman for the logo committee?
I bring all the buds good. And
I see.
we get creative
there. There you go. Room. All right, very
came
good.
Came up with red.
A couple of things going on. President apparently had a very good meeting with Apple. Did you hear about this?
No, but it reminds me of that stupid, hey, Apple.
Remember? Oh, I know.
Sorry.
Hey, Apple.
Yeah, yeah.
I think I have Hey Apple.
I know. Don't. No, I knew it.
No, I
We're
think
off
I have,
the track.
I think
it's
I have
over.
Hey, Apple.
Re-rack. Let's go.
No. Hey, Apple.
Hey, Apple. But
hey, Apple.
He met with, what's his name, Steve Apple, he called him?
Yeah.
Didn't he? Something like that.
Yeah, Steve Apple.
I thought he did. He did
Same
one
Tim
time.
Tim Cook.
I know, but he, or Tim Apple. Or
Tim Cook.
I know what I'm saying.
You mean Steve Jobs?
I don't know what the
No,
hell I'm
he met
about.
With Tim Cook.
I'll look it up.
Apple. See, Steve
Go.
Jobs is dead.
Okay.
New Apple CEO is Tim Cook.
So I blurred him. So yeah, Tim Apple is what the president called him one time.
I don't believe
in
you
a
did.
Go on.
I don't believe you
story.
Did. I never heard
totally
that story.
Totally Googling
it. I never heard that story.
Okay, well, shut up.
Donald Trump sat down with CEO, Apple CEO Tim Cook to discuss how the U.S. tariffs on the Chinese goods are going to impact iPhone versus the Samsung. Because Samsung's made in Korea.
Okay.
Korean company.
Yeah, not
Samsung doesn't use China. Samsung uses Korea, and Samsung uses Vietnam.
Well, huh.
By the way, Vietnam's got, you know, $3,400 a year for average laborer versus $13,000 a year for an average laborer in China. It's cheaper to do business in Vietnam. But it gives a disadvantage to Samsung, these tariffs do. And what Tim Cook is looking for, and he was making a very compelling argument according to the stories, he's looking for a pass. He's looking for some sort of a... an exemption from the tariffs for Apple. And I think that would open up a can of worms because look at the farmers don't get exempt. He gets exempt.
Yeah.
And of course, the narrative is going to be lining the pockets of a billionaire is what it's going to
right.
feel. And in reality, what he's trying to say is, look, we can't compete. You want us to make crap in the U.S.? We'll make it in the U.S., but you can't do it if you're going to put tariffs on the stuff. Right. And he makes a compelling argument.
Well, he certainly brought it all to the table.
Well, here's the deal.
It's a mess.
Because you can't. Well, because I think and Donald Trump has made this mistake before. China doesn't pay tariffs, and neither do you as a U.S. consumer.
Right.
Importers pay tariffs. Okay, and that's the problem.
Somehow.
So basically, this is what happens.
Yeah.
Basically, what you're saying, if you're going to impose a tariff on someone on a country, you're saying, okay, fine, I'm just going to add 10% to the price of your goods. Now you got to charge 10% more. Well, and they're, of course, not charging more, but the government's adding 10%, so hence it's more.
Oh,
so basically,
God.
What they're basically, like, it's what the Department of Commerce is doing to the tomato imports coming in.
From where?
From Mexico.
Oh, yeah.
So the biggest import in Mexico to the U.S. is tomatoes, followed by avocados.
Okay? And,
And the, yeah, and probably a little some sketchy imports.
Those are peppers!
But, but the long story short is that the Department of Commerce is accusing Mexico of what's called dumping. And dumping means dropping the prices so low that it impacts U.S. farmers.
Hmm.
So in exchange for, you better behave or we're going to add I think it was a 7.5% tariff to your deal.
Yeah, yeah.
All they're basically doing is saying, look, no matter what you're selling for, it's going to cost you 7.5%. It's going to cost the people on this side of the border 7.5% more, so they're going to go elsewhere for their tomatoes.
Yes.
That's what they're basically trying to do. That's what tariffs are. The intention of tariffs is to say, our people aren't going to buy from you because it's too expensive to buy from you because we're making it too expensive to buy.
Would it get to the point where Apple says, hey,
Vietnam.
Vietnam could
potentially.
Could
Vietnam's
up?
The biggest winner out of this whole deal.
Yeah.
And look, I will tell you, this whole trade war is not going to last very long because because China's economy is too fragile. They can't compete with us in a trade war, not even for a little.
They got to focus on Hong Kong.
Yeah, they really do. Yeah,
you see that
Hong Kong slipping away.
The big umbrella fest.
Yeah.
They're like a million people showed up, and they all had umbrellas that looked like a Christo
painting. I have to tell you, that's pretty brave.
Yes, it
when
is.
You start yapping about the government of China, mm-hmm. and you start saying it on camera, next thing you know, you're never seen again.
I thought you meant it was brave to stand in a lightning storm holding a metal umbrella with a million friends.
That's not that brave.
No, I'm kidding.
Hey, so all of this talk makes, obviously, gold very exciting. And as I mentioned last week, on national television, on this program, I said it on MSNBC, I said it on Fox Business, and it locally in San Diego and L.A., that gold is back in fashion. And we predicted last month that gold is going to see $1,500 an ounce. It certainly it's right there. Most gold pundits, and not people in the gold business, but analysts are saying the 2,000 number again, potentially by the end of 2020 or 2021. Here to talk about that is a guy we've had on the air before. We had such a good response from him. I asked one of our producers to ask him back. His name is Justin Reed. He's the CEO and director of Troilus Gold Corporation. They are publicly traded here in the U.S. under the stock symbol CHXMF. I'll put that stock symbol up on our website to make it a little bit easier. But
this is what I thought my little Geiger counter thing that you go to the beach with and look for coins.
You're going to catch that stuff?
I want to see that in my virtual goggles when I just look for
you're
gold.
You're just going to see paper clips and crap. But Justin is a geologist, and he also has a lot of experience in capital markets. But he sort of gave us a great overview last time, so I thought we'd bring him back and talk about the gold business. Justin, thanks, man. How are you?
Great, guys, but all this talk of apple and tomatoes, and I'm looking at that jacket, I can't get my eyes off.
Thank you very much.
No kidding.
Hey, and your samples didn't show up yet, so I'm just saying.
Yeah, the gold samples. Hey, give us an overview, just a short, like this week in gold, because gold crossed over 1,500 an ounce, sort of like you said it would last time you were on the air with us.
Well, you know, I was on the market with you or with you 6 weeks ago, and gold is $1,350. Yeah. We're sitting at over $1,500 today, up 16%. Look at the futures. December futures are $1,550, so everything's going higher. A bunch of things we're going to talk about, right? Negative bond yields, Fed rate easing, India devaluing currency, recession discussions on every talk show today, whether you believe it or not. You guys hit on it just a few seconds ago. You've got the Chinese army sitting outside of Hong Kong. What does all that mean? That means economic volatility. That means economic instability. And it's just feeding itself. And so if we see any kind of slowing in the U.S. economy, because it's all about the U.S. dollar, we're going to keep printing more money. And if we're going to keep printing more money, the deficit's going to get bigger. And if that volatility starts snowballing, gold's going to keep going. And then if we take a look away from the economic side, and let's look at the tangible, fundamental, what can we measure side, gold-backed ETFs, as of the end of this week, are at six-year highs. They're up 85% over last year. That we're seeing a huge inflow of capital coming into gold-backed assets. So we're going to hard assets. And interestingly enough, it's not the Americans, it's not the Canadians, it's not the North Americans, and it's not the Asians. 65% of that inflow right now is coming in from the UK and Europe. So I think we're also on the back of this. We have a Brexit driver behind it and the volatility that comes with that. Do I think gold's going higher? I think it's going a lot higher.
So, Justin, let me ask you something. First of all, Justin Reed, CEO and director of Troilus Gold Corp., and you can go check them out at troilusgold.com. That's T-R-O-I-L-S. Mm-hmm. I beg your pardon. You know what? Just go to bigshabizzo.com. There'll be a link right there. That's going to be easier. Or just go to Troilus, just like it sounds, gold.com. What do you say to those people that say that gold is not a hedge against inflation anymore? I have that argument all the time. And I can defend gold pretty well, but I want to hear from the source. Because you've heard sort of lately, popping up the last couple of years, there's been a couple of analysts pop up and say, hey, you know, gold isn't that great of a hedge against inflation. And it really is. But what do you say to those people? And why do you suppose that has popped its ugly head up? Is it just because gold went out of favor for a couple of years?
Sure, it went hugely out of favor. And, you know, it's supply and demand like anything else, right? We are seeing every central bank moving back towards increasing their stockpiles of gold. We are inflation-backed hedge, absolutely. I mean, we talked about it a little bit last time, but food's not getting cheaper, rent's not getting cheaper, the average U.S. wage is not going up despite promises. So from that standpoint, the discussion of moving back to a gold-backed currency or economy, sure, we're seeing more and more. And fundamentally, I can't tell you a new gold mine that's come into production in the last 2 years in North America.
So they're not making anymore is what you're basically saying. Stay right there. I'm going to keep you over because I think it's worth the discussion. Plus, I want to look at a couple of the charts. IAU, GLD are a couple of the gold exchange traded funds.
I like gold because it's tangible. You can feel it.
It's so funny you say that because I was thinking of when I was just first went to work, there was a guy named Barry Fenn.
Yeah.
And Barry used to say, you know, I just buy gold because there's nothing like the feeling of gold in your hand.
Right. Right? And it's measured in, you know, in something that I can relate to.
And when your mom's sleeping, you can just peel it right out of her back teeth and
take it down. Do you hear that, Mom? Keep your mouth closed.
Justin Reed, CEO and director, Troilus Gold Corp.
Wow, wait a second, man.
See, measured in something I can relate to. It's a bar.
Whoa. Everybody.
There it is. What a great crowd.
Jump Television Studios, The Big Biz Show, our affiliates, and our hosts are not registered investment advisors or broker-dealers. Our show hosts make no commitment that the purchase of securities of companies profiled or otherwise mentioned in our programming are suitable or advisable for any person, or that an investment in such securities will be profitable in general. Given the nature of the companies profiled and the lack of an active trading market for their securities, investing in such securities is highly speculative and carries a high degree of risk. We profile selected publicly traded and privately held companies on our program. Most of these companies that we profile have provided compensation to Jump Television Studios and its hosts for the profile coverage. From time to time, we sell shares of the companies profiled in the open market that we receive as compensation for coverage of client companies, but never sell stock if we are speaking about interviewing or covering a public company who has paid compensation. Specific questions on compensation can be obtained by contacting jumptvstudios@gmail.com. Listeners should verify all claims and do their own due diligence before investing in any securities mentioned on this program. Investing in securities is speculative and carries a high degree of risk. We encourage our listeners to invest carefully and read the investor information available at the websites on the Securities and Exchange Commission, the SEC, at sec.gov, and or the Financial Industry Regulatory Authority, FINRA, at finra.org.
Born broke and you die broke. They're trying not to take the in-between part too seriously. It's Sully and Russ on the Big Biz Show.
Hey there, Big Biz Show. BigBizShow.com. Hey, we got Tom DelBaccaro coming in studio today. Looking forward to that. Talking to Justin Reed, CEO and director of Troilus Gold Corp. T-R-O-I-L-U-S, gold.com, or they are publicly traded here in the U.S. under the stock symbol C-H-X-M-F. Lots of great resources on their website. Justin is a capital markets guy as well as a geologist. He is in the perfect position to run a gold company, and of course, right there in Canada is, there's many, did you know there's so many gold companies in Canada? It's really the gold-rich environment. Let's take a look, if you would, please, at a couple of charts for me. So when we were doing buy-sell or hold here on this program before I got 1,000 emails a day asking me about stocks, we were looking at two. We always looked at the oil and gas sector, and we looked at the gold sector.
Yeah, we had a lot of gas oil buddies.
We did.
Regularly.
GLD is one stock, exchange-traded fund, that is just...
Oh, my goodness.
So let me tell you what you're looking at here. First of all, you're looking at a year chart, okay, of gold, okay, GLD. It's an exchange-traded fund. It's a basket of gold stocks, okay? The thick, jagged line is where the stock is trading today. So if you were to buy a share of GLD right now, it's going to cost you $141 a share. The thin red line is the 50-day moving average. The thin blue line is the 13-day moving average. So what I'm looking at there is a short-term trading average and longer-term trading average. Now, I could look at a 50-day and a 200-day if I want to. Just comparing short and long.
Gotcha.
Because I'm looking at what's called a moving average. And as those averages converge or diverge, it'll sort of tell you how the stock is trending. So right now,
if
I were to call this, if I were to call it, I'd call it a buy. I wouldn't call it a strong buy yet, and there's only one reason why. But I would call it a buy. The only reason I'm not going to call it a strong buy is if you look at the very bottom indicator, that's what's called a stochastic oscillator. And that'll tell you if something is reasonably priced or sort of too expensive.
It's a little too expensive.
Well, yeah, because you know why? Because it gapped up from 134 to 141 very quickly. You see that period of time in the beginning of August where the chart went, you know, just right through the roof? So it's going to have to consolidate for a little bit before. And if you'll notice, if you go back in history when gold went sideways between April and June, look at the stochastic oscillator between April and June. It was fairly valued to undervalued.
Right.
So this tells you if a stock is too expensive or too cheap for its trading range. Look at IAU. IAU is also an exchange-traded fund. It is the iShares Gold Trust. Same exact chart, isn't it? Just toggle back and forth for a second.
Pretty much.
Look at the same chart?
I'm tripping.
Look at that.
It is.
It's the same
chart. What's going on here, Wall Street?
It's two different charts, two different baskets of gold stocks. But to your point, Justin, you're absolutely right. I mean, if you look at the gap up in where gold was, you can't help. And even though gold is a commodity, this is a way you could trade it as a stock. And you can use technical analysis and fundamentals to sort of trade it other than just trading as a commodity. What does that do for you and your projections? Because you guys are redefining the model. Talk about your business. We've been talking about gold. But when you look at things like the exchange-traded fund, how does that redefine your model and sort of give us a review of what your model is again for those people that didn't catch you last time?
No, that's a great question. ETFs have really changed the nature of investing, especially in commodities and gold in general, right? Because if we were to look 10 years ago, there were a number of standard resource-focused funds where the junior companies such as myself or many others or mid-cap producers could go. They need to raise equity as they move their projects forward. Now what we're seeing is a big diversion away from standard investing where the generalist can get better, more broader exposure by investing into an ETF, like you just said. So for us, it makes it a little more difficult because it's not actively managed; it's passive management, and I'm in a capital-intensive phase. So access to capital for the juniors is harder to find. We are lucky. We have over 29 institutions that own our name. They've been with us a long time. They've been in other companies that we've successfully brought to market and moved forward. And so access to capital is good for us. But what it does tell you, to your point, is that there's a lot of opportunities in the junior gold market right now because of the lack of capital that's been there for 2 years. So there are great projects that haven't had the money that once the market gets a hold of them, they're going to move very quickly.
So, Justin, that brings me to a question because gold did go out of favor just because of the price. It was going sideways for us. That's really the only reason. But what I don't understand about folks in their portfolios is, and tell me this is true, I don't know if it was you that told me this, or I've heard this several times over the last 20 years, but you might have been one that told me this. There's only enough gold in the world that's been mined to fit in two Olympic-sized swimming pools.
Something
so
like that,
there's only a finite amount. Why would this not be more of an active commodity? I've never understood that, because if you just look at sheerly...
And who would put gold in a pool?
Yeah, exactly.
Close question.
The laws of supply and demand would dictate this price should be going up like the Dow would be going up, regardless of what's happening. What explains that?
100%. So if you put together... What is Apple's and Amazon's market cap put together?
A lot.
Well, it would be the biggest company in the world by twice, because between ExxonMobil and Apple, you've got the biggest you got the two biggest companies in the world. And based on what stock's trading at.
What happened if I told you the entire global world's market cap, if you put every gold company together in the world, is $300 billion?
Yeah, see
and that's the problem, right? And for many huge funds, unless you are a major liquid company, you know, Fidelity, the big investment houses in the world, aren't going to look at you. So
I gotcha, because it's a zero sum game after a while, because it's because there's only so much of it. Justin, I can't get enough of you, man. I want to make you a regular on the program. Unbelievable stuff. Justin Reed, Troilus Gold Corp. I'm going to have them on next week, because I never did get about their different business model. But go check their website out. Unbelievable guy. CHXMF is their stock symbol, and troilusgold.com. Tom Del Beccaro joins us next. It's the Big Biz Show. BigBizShow.com. Stand by. So don't worry.
Asking the hard-hitting questions you want answers to, but mostly just drifting off and staring blankly at the wall. It's the Big Biz Show with Russ and Sully.
Georgia, I swear I've never seen such a smile.
Hey there, Big Biz Show, BigBizShow.com. Great to have you along today. Thanks again to our friends from Troilus. God, he was good. I like him a lot.
And a lot of our people that we interview do send us samples if you're still listening. Come on, hook a brother
you're
up.
You're a CBD company. Russ wants samples. You're a gold company.
Remember the Italian horns that were so big back in disco days?
Because they were big, but they weren't popular.
Well, I like them. I want an Italian horn.
You want an Italian horn. Would you wear an Italian horn?
Yes.
I noticed Tom and I don't have any jewelry whatsoever.
I don't either. Except that huge-ass watch. Here's my huge-ass watch.
Dr. Hugh.
What time?
Last name, Dr. Jass. Calling Dr. Jeff.
Why? Because we can't see anymore.
Yeah, that's exactly right. Yeah. That's the only reason I have large watch. Tom Del Beccaro in studio once again. He wrote the book, The Divided Era. Yeah, here he comes. Go get it.
Sooner or later.
Yeah. Are you writing a new book? Do I understand?
Two new books.
Didn't we do liner notes for you?
No.
Two new books? We have more liner notes than any two people in the world.
In the history of mankind?
Yeah. Yes, we have lots of liner notes.
Recorded.
Oh, yeah.
I got rid of
it. Because people come on the air and they see the value in our exposure. Yeah.
I heard the Bible was written in response to Russ.
really oh, what a great question.
Can you talk to me what it's about?
Well, one of the new books is my life work. It's called The Lessons of the American Civilization. It's an ode to Will Durant, who wrote The Lessons of History. It explains how civilizations come together, rise and fall, and then tells the American story in that light.
Is the American story going to fall?
Where are we in the arc
of that story?
Yeah, that's what I want to know.
I came here to talk about the market, folks.
No, but, come on.
Is the American civilization...
Are we going to socialism in our lifetime?
Yes.
In our lifetime.
Elizabeth Warren wants to take the federal budget from $5 trillion to $18
trillion. So you think we won't be a democracy in our lifetime?
No, I didn't say that. People will still be voting, but government spending on its current trajectory will hit 60-70%
So we don't have to wear those gray smocks like they have in China.
And the thing about the thing about America is it has two oceans, it has friendly neighbors, or not aggressive adversarial nature. And we have nuclear bombs, which have procured more borders than anything in history.
Yeah.
So we are going to have this slow growth in government, sometimes sped up. This is an easy prediction to make. Since Reagan, remember Reagan said government's not the solution to our problem, government is the problem?
Yes.
Right.
Government's 3.5 times larger than it was then.
Yeah. Oops.
Where's it going to stop? Governments in history don't decide, oh, we should be rational this week and we're going to downsize. Mm. No, they run out of money. So 20 years from now, you'll have a federal budget, you'll have interest, you'll have Social Security and Medicare, some form of that. But it's not going to be able to do much else. It's going to fall back on the states.
Should I take my Social Security today, just call them and go, put me, I'm coming in early, man.
We've been hearing that Social Security is going to run out, though, for 30 years, though.
True, but it will be the last to run out because it will be constantly bailed out. But other things are going to take federal support of, like, the education department is going to have to dwindle because there just won't be the money to do that sort of thing. And by the way, there shouldn't have been to begin with.
Right. And it should be less because aren't there fewer kids coming in the system?
Not necessarily. But remember, Western welfare states are a pyramid scheme. You have to constantly put people at the bottom to have jobs to pay for
us.
An aging population. Right. There's going to have to be, in business terms, a correction, and it's usually painful.
Let me tell you the biggest predictable crisis in America is the government overcommitment of entitlements.
That's always been true. The end of the Roman Republic featured some element of that and disorder, which is why the Republic ended and became imperial again when they imposed order.
See, this is why Tom said, I love his history bend on politics.
I know it, because now...
Because he just compared the end of the Roman Empire, right, which ended badly, with us. Okay. Perfect. I'm feeling
so
much better.
Do I really want to read
Republic.
The book?
I didn't say empire. It took another luxurious...
Oh, that's right. It went to the Senate, didn't
400
it?
Years before it did that. But... I put a meme out this weekend about they never sell socialism on socialism merits. What they do is create fear and derision and
right.
everything else.
Yeah.
So they are demonizing capitalism. That's how socialism comes in, the rich. Mm. Oh, you got to stop the rich. People right. buy into that. Or they use the disorder line, which is things are out of order, so we have to centralize government to do order again. Why do you think the left is Uh-oh. So obsessed about white nationalism? Because and these people coming out and saying white nationalists are such a threat. Because they're selling disorder, therefore you have
right.
to elect
sure.
us,
sure.
and they usher
no,
socialism in.
No, exactly. One thing, according to anything that you read, Social Security's got about 15 years left of runway.
So do I.
Medicare, I know.
I'm calling them today.
Medicare's got what, 7 years left or something like
well,
that?
It
of runway?
Depends. And that's the thing about the time you need the most economic growth is when government is sapping the most out of it.
Sure.
But that's not what you get. As government saps, the growth goes down. Mm-hmm. And then they make a more complex code. They make it more progressive, which reduces growth long term and brings things in. I tell the people who are anti-Trump out there, and you, if you're looking forward to Social Security and Medicare, in addition
you better support guys like Donald Trump.
Who have economic growth programs, because
right,
at 1.5% growth under Obama, it happens, or eventually Biden, it happens a lot quicker.
In your book, The Divided Era, there, and I haven't looked at it in the last week or two, but I have, obviously, it's a great bathroom reader if you're here in the studio.
It's all dog.
Are you saying it's full of something?
It is. No, but are you talking?
Here's my question. Why do index pages count as pages?
Anyway,
all right.
My concern is when states go bankrupt. You look at Kentucky and New Jersey
or Detroit. Look what happened with Detroit.
Right, but Detroit though went through a regentrification after that. But I'm telling you, when a state goes bankrupt,
what happens?
That is serious. Like, makes the news, overthrow the government.
Remember when California had IOUs?
Yes.
And they want.
But we didn't have mass communication like we have now. That's yeah. the problem. Is when government had IOUs, you heard about it on the evening news. It mm-hmm. fizzled out by noon the next day, and you heard about it again on the weekend news. Now, when you hear Kentucky's bankrupt or New Jersey's bankrupt or IOUs are being given out by the most populous states,
you get alerts.
You get alerts on your phone, and that causes panic. I mean, look, we talked about the fear and greed process before. What happens at that point? Does that change the narrative in the federal side or the national side?
Will bankruptcies get... Look at what happened in Stockton when it went bankrupt. Now Stockton goes bankrupt, and now it has universal income where it's giving people money. Do politicians learn the lesson of the profligate spending of the past?
Right.
No, otherwise
you're right.
Socialism would never return.
Well, that's exactly right. And as it affects the markets, okay, and this market being run on fear and greed, as Tom will parry with me about from time to time. The fact of the matter is you can almost chart the fear factor during an election year. And here we go into another one.
And we're up, 1.85% on the year on the Dow, which is essentially sideways. That's not a big move.
No.
The problem with the trade deal
As of last Wednesday, we were where we were a year ago, and we gained that 1.8% in the last 3 days. So you're absolutely right.
So, and the problem with the trade deal, which is harming the market, is that there's no set pattern to it. It's not like next Tuesday we expect X. It could be at any moment.
Oh, boy.
And that uncertainty hurts the market, right? But look, I'm going to tell you, from here until Election Day, mm-hmm. I would expect the market to go basically sideways. I'm going to have a piece coming out, I think, at Fox Business on this subject, because as government interferes with markets, it creates uncertainty. It creates diversions, all kinds of problems. I expect, and look, Elizabeth, seriously, Elizabeth Warren's on the rise in the Democrat Party.
She's
and
so hard.
She would double the national debt in a year and a half.
I couldn't.
Double it in a year and a half if she got her way.
Here's the thing about her. I will tell you the thing about most of them is that the fact that it's all a great narrative right now, but I think when people start really thinking in terms of when they walk into the voter booth, what's going to happen,
this all the time. There are two things that are going to happen between now and next March, which are not reflected in the polls, and and will hurt the Democrats. One is this IG report that's coming out, which is going
to
be a blow.
Okay, wait a second. Okay, save that because I want to get that. I want to get that after the break. What's the second one?
People realizing their tax and spending ways and how much it will cost them, including their health care.
You know, this the other thing, too, and you talk about government interference with the stock market. This is what this is. You know, I was talking about the debt market being tampered with last week. You know, you see this inverted yield curve where it's a technical indicator flashing that the market's going to take
they're a dive.
Basically, what it says is that governments have to pay you more if you're going to have your money at risk longer. That's a long-term bond. Well, when the government says, I'm going to pay you more for short-term, it's just like when you need a short-term loan, you're going to pay more or less. It shows panic. It shows instability. Well, the problem is that we've been messing with the debt markets by buying our own debt for so long that yield curve, you can't depend on the same metrics that you compare to.
The new world.
Well, it really is because it's not an exact free market economy. But we have to talk about that AG report or IG report. Regarding the Department of Justice and everything else. That's pretty scary stuff. It talks about the deep state. Talks about the fact that, you know, I mean, you can wonk about Hillary Clinton's hard drives, and you can wonk about the Russia probe. But at the end of the day, this is some pretty heavy. This is maybe the heaviest stuff out of all three of those topics. Tom DelBacaro joins us today. It's the Big Biz Show.
Stop your wonking.
Stand by. We're back in a second.
They voted Ben Bernanke sexiest Fed chairman ever. It's Sully and Russ on the Big Biz Show.
Big Biz Show, BigBizShow.com. Great to have you on. Coming up tomorrow, Will Waldrop from Evio Labs.
Look, the book dances.
Who's here?
Will Waldrop. I love him.
Yeah.
Cannabis guy.
Labs. Yeah.
Yeah.
He's in the testing division. Yeah, he's a smart guy. You know, I'm not going to be in the cannabis business.
Yeah.
I'm going to be in a vertical market that serves the cannabis business.
Why not?
Fantastic stuff. Tom DelBacaro in studio, The Divided Era, politicalvanguard.com.
That's what I do, by the way.
He is a talk show host. He is a political pundit. He's also an attorney. What kind of law do you like? Business litigation?
Really?
Startups.
You go in and yell at the judges
there's,
and everything?
But there's no
this
market
is awesome.
For that jacket.
You go in and yell at judges, don't you?
No, actually.
See, I learned how to ask questions like a lawyer.
Redundant!
on the
Your time's up! Next.
On the inside, you say, oh my God, I can't believe you said that out loud and we're paying for you to do it. On the inside. On the outside, you say, Your Honor, I understand your concern.
Yes.
Really?
Oh, yes. I could see that.
Can judges actually be fair and balanced? I mean, can they act? Because everybody has a political opinion. Everybody's got a moral opinion. Everybody's got a personal opinion.
Yeah,
can a judge actually
aside?
Sit up there and actually sweep? Do they teach you in judge school how to sweep that stuff aside? How do you do that?
I tell people all the time, we all have our prejudices, and they do leak in somewhere. Being a historian, you are selective. It's impossible to get everything and be completely objective. On the other hand, there are those who practice being more objective than others. I like to think that as a historian, I don't think you end up in a certain spot, so you can't say, okay, well, let's get to the spot. There are judges, some are better than others. But at the federal level, the answer is can be less so because the federal judges deal with more social issue cases and policy than the state courts who usually deal with commercial problems.
Okay, so, but at the end of the day, though, when someone, like, for example, let's talk about this IG report. It's going to have to sit in front of a judge at some point.
Portions. What happens to certain people? Look, this IG report
Take it from the top so people understand what's going on.
It's much different. So what you saw, the Mueller report, which was supposedly an independent investigation targeted at a specific issue. The federal government has inspector generals for departments, and it's their job to sort of like to review the ongoings of their particular departments, whereas the DOJ or the Ag Department or
they just do it and
they do it as a matter of course, mm-hmm. but sometimes they are directed to a specific issue. This one relates to the DOJ as it interacted with the FBI over the FISA warrants and all of that.
Right, let's break that down. The FISA warrants were the warrants used in the Russia investigation
to retroactively justify what they had already been doing, spying on Trump campaign officials.
And there is a special FISA court, correct?
There is a secret FISA court.
That's weird.
Now, we're the United States of America. How can there be a secret court? This is the U.S.
They wear hoods and stuff, meet in a dungeon, big flames.
No, but honestly, how can this be a FISA? It's the U.S. of A.
You know, if the country was more libertarian, we wouldn't have these problems. Sully needs to step up on this particular issue.
That was the 80s. He'll never get elected.
Anyway, so there is this court, and it's the foreign intelligence that they're supposed to be going at. But when you spy on a foreigner, usually an American's in the picture. So it's normally that court approves these things, because what they do is they black out the name of the American that's talking to the foreigner.
Okay.
In this case, they trumped up, the false things against, like, Carter Page, saying Carter Page has Russian contacts, even though the FBI had used him to put other people in jail. They knew he was clean. He's never been charged. They told the FISA court that he's essentially gone bad, and then they allowed surveillance. They didn't black out Carter Page's name at that point. What they did is continue to spy on Trump officials, claiming they had ongoings with Russian officials, which, of course, now we know really wasn't true at all. They did have interaction, but that doesn't mean that there was...
But wasn't the basis for this FISA warrant based upon a dossier that was full of... which is basically a fantasy, fake information?
The dossier and other things. Like, one of the worst abuses. So they put the dossier in front of them, which has, again, never vetted. It's never been proven. And they said they signed it. When I'm an attorney and I go to court, I have to sign a declaration when I put evidence there that says this is true and correct.
Yeah.
They did that, even though they lied to the court, because never did they actually know whether it was true and correct. And then they knew Christopher Steele had leaked it. They fired him. The FBI fired him for leaking it to the press. But then what the DOJ knowingly, some officials, anti-Trump officials, knowingly also put in the FISA application. Look, it's out in the media. That's independent proof. But all Christopher Steele did was give the story to Yahoo News.
Right.
And then, so it was sort of this circular proof. Anyway, at the end of the day, this is going to be very ugly. The question is whether people actually go to jail over this, which they should.
People like James Comey, for example.
Comey, McCabe.
That'd be great.
Several officials at that level.
A perp parade.
But then you'd have a split of the FBI itself, though.
What do you mean?
Well, because I think there's Comey fans. You've got division in the country based upon down political lines. You must have division there between down political lines.
I bet retired FBI guys are pissed.
Well, there are a lot of officials who didn't like James Comey and what he did. But yes, you're right. This is what the problem with big government and corruption is.
Yeah.
It's just very divisive. The more government decides, the more it divides. And this is going to be a very... You like that one?
You're I do.
That. The
I like
more
it.
Government decides, the more it divides.
Cool.
And this is going to be an ugly chapter in American history. And if we don't root this out...
Yeah.
In government corruption, two rights, two wrongs, unless they are addressed, become a right. What I mean by that is people say, they got away with it. I get away with it. You should see the corruption in New York City.
Well, they call that precedence, don't they? It's called precedence.
Lock
it really is. I mean, if you think in terms of that. Last of all, it's nice to see guys like Bill Maher get in the game and take some. Yeah, you show some nads and show some morality against Tlaib,
the squad
and stuff like that.
We shouldn't disinvest from Israel because other countries in the Middle East are so good.
That's a sign.
Right.
All right. When do you come back to San Diego?
Or do we get you and I are negotiating a big deal on whether I get sunglasses.
Next time
I have to look at his jacket.
Tom's going to have a red.
I have a
Peter Millar jacket next time to go wrong with Russ's Remax jacket.
Yep. And you can get an autographed copy of his book if you call me, and I'll put your name right here. It's autographed by me, not him.
Tom, thanks so much. Tom Del Vaccaro, TomDelVaccaro.com, PoliticalVanguard.com, and his book, The Divided Era.
TGDB.
Chris Yannick is our director. Jared Coleman, our assistant director. Curtis Manovich, our floor director, our floor cameraman, our editor, our composer, our keeper of keys, and from whom all blessings flow. RussIsFunny.com because...
RussIsFatAndBald.com was taken.
You can catch us anywhere at BigBizShow.com and Sully Speaks. We'll see you tomorrow.